Join passionate automotive trainer and coach Andrew Uglow as he smashes open the myth of the money-motivated mechanic and he reveals their true passions. You'll discover tips on building a thriving workshop culture, equipping your team for the future. I'm Anthony Pearl, your host of the Frictionless Workshop Podcast. Let's get cranking. So, Andrew, I wanted to discuss, I guess, what we'd call, and I know you'd like to call this term, hot potato issue. You know, there are often complaints from workshop owners that all technicians want is more money. But it's not true, is it?
I agree with what Confucius said around money. You can't eat it, but you can't eat without it. And there is certainly some room to pay technicians more money. If you look at the level of skill, knowledge, ability that is demanded of them, and you start mapping that across other industries, technicians, I believe, are clearly underpaid. And I don't know anyone that would honestly argue otherwise. The challenge becomes, let me ask you this question in response. And let me ask the listeners this question in response. How many technicians do you know that became a technician because they wanted to get rich?
Yeah, I think there's I think the silence speaks volumes, isn't it? Because it's interesting, isn't it? Because that's one of the things is that they're, you know, people who become a technician because they're passionate about what they do and they love what they do.
Absolutely. It falls into the 80-20 Pareto principle, right? Roughly about 40% of technicians love cars. Like they are just enamored by cars. And that was certainly me. I did work experience in a workshop and it was just like, this is the best thing ever. I can't think of anything I would rather do. And can I say, I've loved it ever since. It has been a thrill. There are other people who are just good with their hands. They love tinkering. They love solving problems. And automotive is like the field for that. They get to do all sorts of stuff that you wouldn't otherwise necessarily do. Certainly things that you wouldn't get to do if it were a corporate environment. And then there's 20% of people who just happened to wake up one morning and found themselves in automotive. And they do okay. Sometimes they get passionate. Sometimes they get terribly disengaged and leave. But certainly the 80% of technicians in the business are doing it because they either love the problem solving or they love the cars or both. And money was never a consideration necessarily in doing it. They look at the money and they go, oh, yeah, but gee, this is fun. And I think that money is certainly becoming more and more important, particularly given financial environments that we're in presently. And the shortage of skills, I think, has contributed to making up some of the gap that technicians should be paid for. And at the same time, businesses need to be sustainable, right? Henry Ford said that a business should be operated for profit. And a business that is only or solely operated for profit shouldn't exist. It should be a combination of the two. It should be operated for profit and for meaning. And so as workshop owners, as workshop management, when we, I call it a whoops, when we have only one performance standard, whoops, and that performance standard is financial, we do a huge disservice to the technicians. And I believe it is a contributing factor for some of the staff turn in the industry, never mind in workshops around the country.
And it's an interesting idea that you talk to as well, because, you know, in my experience across a range of different industries, there is often this, this gulf between sales and operations. And I've worked in industries where they've almost literally come to fisticuffs because of the disparagement between who is the more important, the person out there on the ground selling all the time or the person making sure things are operating as one. And part of the key is I believe as well, is getting those things to work in unison, but also working behind it as well and understanding What are the real issues that are driving, you know, the mentality in asking for more money? It's not necessarily always about that, is it? It's that's what the tip of the iceberg is a little bit in that disparagement between those two ideas, because it is about other things.
Look, most definitely. And I'm going to argue black and blue that if you only make working in a workshop, working on cars, service and repair of vehicles about money, you're making a rod for your own back. Don't get me wrong. You need to pay good money. You do. That's the fact of the matter. And being a tech, I would never say no to money. Don't get me wrong. There's overtime. I'm up for it. Let's go. I'll take the money. But when we only make it about money, when we only incentivize people on the amount of money that they make, I think that is profoundly toxic. Because essentially what happens is, and certainly this has been my experience and the experience of a lot of technicians that I've talked to and train over decades, is because it becomes solely about money, all of the other things get pushed to the back. They get dismissed. They get ignored. They have to make choices between doing what they believe is the right thing, the correct thing, the technically accurate thing, and doing the fast thing that makes them more money. And when you incentivize, when you financially incentivize people and it causes them to give up values, to give up things or beliefs that they hold to be true, and valid beliefs too, not just invalid beliefs or false beliefs or incomplete beliefs, but actually genuine things that were the reason why they started in the trade. When you start forcing people to do that, that is a violation on a personal level. That is a big deal. That's not just a trivial thing. That's a huge deal. And you do that often enough, it kills your soul. It absolutely destroys the reason that you're there in the first place. And all that's left then is about money. And of course, when it's only about money, guess what? The technicians start to only work for money. And if someone else is going to pay them more money to work for them, they'll go and work for that person's money, not your money. And I think this is an issue that's been entirely lost in the industry, is certainly in the dealership world and perhaps other independent or franchise workshops, is because for the owner, it's all about the money, right? If you're not making profit, you're in a world of poo. Like for the business owner, it's about the money, but for the technician, it isn't. And I think projecting that mentality on technicians has been terribly toxic, and has been a key reason why a bunch of them, certainly people that I know, have left. Like there was a gentleman, we were really quite good friends. He was a gifted operator. He made the business a lot of money. Excellent with customers, excellent with staff, fast, like crazy fast. I aspired to be as fast as this guy was. And he came to the point where he was so sick of doing things because it would be faster. He was so sick of doing things because it was more profitable, instead of doing what he believed to be and technically was the right thing to do. He couldn't face work anymore. And I can tell you dozens of these guys that get to this point where they've just had a gutful. I'm done. I'm out. And it starts out as professional attendance, right? They rock up, they do the stuff, and then they leave. And their work quality drops off, their rate drops off, their enthusiasm drops off. You see it. They come to training 6 months later and they're a different person. It's like, well, what's going on with you? Oh, work's shit. Why is work shit? Oh, they only care about money. Well, you know, don't you want to get paid more? Yeah, for sure. But not if it's going to cost me my passion, not if it's going to cost me my enthusiasm, not if I'm going to be forced to do stuff that I think is wrong or dangerous.
Yeah, I think it's a really important part that we need to dig a little bit further into, because this is a space that has changed a lot in the last few decades. You know, the mechanics that have been around for a number of years now need to constantly be upgrading in their capabilities, don't they? Because the vehicles are changing, the tech around the vehicles is changing. So they need more training, they need more equipment in order to keep pace with all of that. And the challenge with that as a business owner is that you know, there's money that needs to go into that. And it's finding that right balance between all of those things to make sure that it's put in the right place. And I think that's the interesting thing about what you're saying is this path that doesn't help anyone by just, oh, it's just got to give the individual more money isn't the, you know, there isn't the answer, because then you've just got dealerships competing against one another, offering more money to the technicians to attract them without necessarily providing them with the skills and the equipment that they need that actually fosters their passion and may make them stay rather than worrying just about the individual dollar for themselves. The Frictionless Workshop podcast is brought to you by Solutions Culture. For details on how to get in touch with Andrew, consult the show notes below. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Now, back to the podcast.
And this goes back to what we mentioned in a previous episode, or mentioned earlier, was just simply just merely paying technicians more money is absolutely positively not the answer. What you need to do, and like you say, is you need to give them a reason to work for you beyond your money, because they could just as easily work for someone else's money as they can for your money. But if you also give them a reason to work for you beyond money, now we're playing in an unequal game. Now your business becomes retention worthy. Now you start to become frictionless, because they're actually going to want to engage, because they enjoy being there, because there's passion, because there's personal reward, because they can sit down at the end of the day and have a beverage, you know, whatever that is, and feel good about themselves because they actually did a good job, and you know they did a good job, and they know that you know that they did a good job. You know, we talk about upgrading from merely paying to rewarding your technicians. And rewarding your technicians obviously is financial, but it's more than just financial. The quality of work, the quality of training they get, the quality of support that you give them, and then adding to reward recognition. That is so critical and so poorly done in the industry. Like, it is breathtakingly bad. Let me give you an example. I was in a training class a couple of weeks back, and we were talking about a particular problem on a vehicle. And this particular vehicle is known for, over time, one of the radiator hoses, or one of the cooling hoses in the vehicle, leaks. It breaks down and starts leaking. To change out this hose is a 6-hour job. You have to remove the entire engine and front suspension system and transmission to be able to get access to this. We call it the job from hell. It is just a difficult, fiddly, nasty, vicious job. It's one of those things where you tear your hands to pieces, you pull your hair out, you end up saying all sorts of impolite things about the car, the owner, the brand. and then after you've got the hose on, you've got to go and put it all back in again and make it work, right? So there is lots and lots and lots of moving parts, lots of possibilities for getting things wrong, lots of very small things that are very easy to overlook. So it's a big job. 6 hours is almost a day's work. One of the techs in my class, we were talking about, well, how are you guys doing this? Is there a better way? And he goes, I can do it in an hour and a half. And I've gone, bullshit. No, you can't. And like in jest, right? Let's test if this is true, right? I said, how are you doing that? And he says, oh, I came across this particular tool. It's nearly $200, but it allows me to do it with the engine in place in about an hour and a half. And I've just gone, that is absolutely amazing. How did you come across that? How did you find that? And again, I go back to the technician was testing, right? Hang on, what if I could do this? What if I could do that? How do I this? How do I that? And that curiosity, like, that's making the business a fortune. For every one of those jobs, he can knock it out in an hour and a half, and they're going to be charging 6 hours because that's what the time is. Like, you know, this is the sort of engagement, this is the sort of skill that you want. Now, the reason I tell you that story is I asked a question on the end of this. I said, oh, your boss must have been absolutely thrilled to the back teeth, right? Did you get a thank you? Did you get a high five? You know, did he offer a beverage? You know, just like, and he goes, no. And I said, what do you mean no? And he said, there was nothing, absolutely nothing. And I said, so you're making this guy a fortune because you figured out how to do this and paid for the tool yourself. And he didn't even have the courtesy to say, freaking well done, that's awesome. And that, I'm going to argue, is systemic in the industry. And then people go, gee, we've got a skill shortage. Well, yeah, if you're not retention worthy, why would they stay? Why would they stay if you're not going to recognize that effort? Now, this again, this isn't every business. There are businesses who are, they would have paid for the tool and given the guy a bonus. But it's not every business yet. And it kind of needs to be.
It's absolutely imperative. I mean, I find that from an outside perspective, shocking on multiple levels. The fact that, you know, first of all, that the tool exists and that more people don't know that the tool exists that are in there, because certainly if I'm the manufacturer of that vehicle and I know that there is this problem and it's been an ongoing problem, I would probably be supplying all the workshops with that tool, because it's going to put them in better stead for starters, but at the very least, at least making them aware of the tool and making it available to everyone so they know that it's there. And then, as you say, not recognizing the individual that was involved in doing that, because you could afford to pay the guy an extra couple of days worth of bonus, because it saved you days and days worth of work, you know, and increased your profitability hugely by having that. And it's not even just that, it's the openness to encourage and foster that kind of thinking, to say, hey, this guy went out of his way and he found something and he got rewarded for that. Imagine what the other people in the workshop then think about what they want to do.
Right. And this is exactly how we start to build a culture that is retention worthy, right? We start to identify the behaviors and the values, and even install the values and beliefs into people and reward them when they do the right behavior, or at the very least recognize them. Hey, Bob, what a cracking job you did in that last car. Under time, well done. Give the guy a fist pump. And you start to do that, and that becomes a thing, right? The technicians work for not money, they work for reward. And that recognition forms part of that reward. It doesn't necessarily even have to be financial. Absolutely, it can be, and there are cases where it should be. But, like, you know, actually pay attention when technicians are doing the right thing and going and acknowledging them. I've worked in workshops where the foreman was that person. And he would go around and go, how are you going, Andrew? Oh, well done on that last job, Andrew. Oh, brilliant diagnosis. We had no idea it was going to be that. Good stuff. Someone else, oh, great time. You know, he always found something positive to say to the technicians. And we punched out our gross labor per month out of that workshop was well above our weight, because people wanted to be there. People felt like they belonged. People actually were recognized for the skill and knowledge and ability that they brought to bear on these things. And then we had a change in management. And that same workshop dropped by nearly 60%. And the only difference, all the policies were the same, all of the bonuses were the same, all of that sort of stuff stayed exactly the same. The only difference was now no one noticed.
It infuriates me when I hear about that, because it's so simple. It's so simple to have a CEO, an owner, someone who's in that senior management role of just doing those little things, because it proves that it's not always about the money, that sometimes just that simple level of recognition can make all of the difference and make it that much better for someone to turn up at work the next day.
There was a study done some years ago, and I'm sorry, I can't actually quote the people who did the study from memory. But it was a lady who was working with an orphanage. And of course, you couldn't do this study now, right? You'd be arrested for abuse, among other things. But they wanted to find out what the ratio was of positive enforcement versus negative enforcement, or encouragement versus discouragement. You know, if I encourage this person 10 times and discourage them once, is that the right ratio? Do they work out better for that or not? Or does that do them harm? Should the ratio be, you know, 5 to 1 or whatever the number is? And the net result was It was actually somewhere in the range from memory of about 7 to 1. So 7 encouragements for every 1 discouragement or rebuke was about the ratio that you needed. I read another study and I think it was 12 to 1. So somewhere between those two numbers. So 12 times going, Anthony, you're doing a cracking job. You should be really proud of what you're doing there. And then, you know, and don't get me wrong, this is not about ignoring poor behavior, but this is simply about offering encouragement when people are doing the right thing. And this is how you build culture, right? You encourage the right thing. What they actually found, though, the actual ratio in the real world was 1 to 22. So for every 22 negative experiences, discouragements, rebukes, people were getting 1 encouragement. And we wonder about the quality of the culture that we work in when that's the case.
Andrew, I wanted to ask you a question about responsibility. When it comes to technology and keeping up to date with the latest in terms of training and what the facilities are that needs to be involved, who's responsible? Who needs to take the lead in this?
And isn't that a tough question? Hey, I'm going to go that it starts with management. If management don't take ownership and responsibility for this, it's hard for the technician to do so, simply because management ultimately control the time. That they control time in the business versus time in training. Technicians can also and should also take responsibility, as in they should, in fact, in their own time, go and watch videos, read things, learn things, do homework, all those sorts of things to constantly stay on top of it. But ultimately, it's the responsibility, I believe, of the management to resource their people effectively. And resource plays out like physically, as in, does the workshop actually have the equipment? Is the internet of the standard that makes working on the car possible at speed? All those sorts of things, like the physical resources. Then, of course, there is the learning resource, as in, are these people trained? And training is ongoing. It's not something that's ever going to end until, you know, we reach an end to technology, technological innovation. And so it's never going to end. And so the technicians need to be across it. And this is I'm going to argue this is a fear that technicians have. And I deliberately use the word fear because they fear doing the wrong thing because they don't know. And when your motivation is fear, guess what sort of results you get? Guess what sort of engagement you get? And the way you address the fear, as a bare minimum, is technical training. But really what you want to be doing is technical development.
Yeah, I think that that's an important understanding for people to have. But isn't it also about this being an open conversation? That it needs to be not one necessarily leading the other, but these things need to happen in unison, don't they? If you've got the right kind of open workshop environment, then you're going to have technicians and owners and managers having a conversation and understanding when things need to happen and how and at what pace.
Absolutely. And I think the other part of that is perhaps dual ownership is a better way of doing that. And then both parties recognizing that this isn't going to happen in an instant, right? Just because someone went to a training course doesn't mean they know it. It means they completed the training, but it doesn't mean that they know it. Most technicians are very kinesthetic in how they work, and they need to actually do it, try it in the real world before it actually goes clunk in their brain. And now they know it because they've done it, they've experienced it. And that kinesthetic element, that sensory touch element of learning is fairly significant.
Thank you for listening to the Frictionless Workshop podcast. For details on how to get Andrew working with you and your technicians, take a look at the show notes. There's also a link to some special content you can access. I'm Anthony Pearl, reminding you to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.